Welcome to the Money Wise Women Show, brought to you by MoneyMorphosis.com. Are you ready to be inspired to upgrade your financial skills? Listen to feminine leaders sharing practical advice and valuable insight. Shift your money mindset, improve communication skills, and learn financial management tips. Although we do not provide investment advice, you can check out MoneyMorphosis.com. That's MoneyMorphosis.com to find simple ways to boost your true wealth.
Hello, it is Crystal Arnold, your hostess of Money Wise Women. So excited to join you here today. I'd like to start by actually diving right into some of the suffering not only I've experienced, but so many of the people that I've worked with around money. And this is the pain of not enough. And this really, for me in the past, it's manifested that I'm not good enough. No matter what I do, it's never good enough. And those kinds of feelings when the inner critic just gets out of control. And, you know, you guys can probably relate when we doubt ourselves, and it can just kind of be a spiral of, just not acknowledging our own immense value. And I see this in so many people, especially around talking about money, whether they're feeling not enough because their bank account isn't big enough, or this bigger feeling of always craving. It's like an endless hunger, this not enough in the world that really drives people for more and more. And I've found what the kind of antidote to this is loving myself deeply and finding ways to not only find time as a busy mom to care for myself, and but also reprogramming just the way my mind works, and being able to kind of quiet down that inner critic. And so I've been realizing lately how our ability to honor our own value is so directly connected with our capacity for self-love and the practices which invite that into our daily lives. And, you know, as women, we can give so much to others and sometimes forget to really be compassionate and nurturing with ourselves on all levels. And so I am so excited to have our guest, Joby Summer, here today. She's got a really quite a unique perspective on this. She is a communication expert, a speaker, author, and coach who is passionate about helping individuals, couples, and teams communicate effectively. She teaches them hands-on, real-life communication skills so they can have deeply fulfilling relationships and make a greater impact in their work in the world. So what I find very interesting is she is a former financial advisor, and as well as a meditator, a practitioner of nonviolent communication and compassionate listening. So she has over 18 years experience in guiding clients to be empowered and establish healthy relationships, communications, and agreements. And Joby believes that effective communication begins with self-compassion and connection. And like I said, she has a very unique perspective on money because when she was only 32 years old, she sold her business as a financial advisor for AIG and dedicated her work to supporting others. And so I'm so excited for her practical advice today that you can really work into your own lives and be able to communicate more clearly and effectively with others about money, and also just really nurture and love yourself too. So Joby, I would love to start out the conversation today just about what, you know, your experience, why you chose to quit the financial advisor position and why you really are so passionate about the communications work that you're doing now.
Yes, well, first of all, Crystal, thank you so much for having me here today. It's such a pleasure to have this conversation with you about money and about self-compassion and self-love and how it's all so intertwined. So first of all, I just really want to express my appreciation. So I'm happy to be here today.
Great. Welcome.
So you were asking me about my shift from being a financial advisor to actually going into communication. And basically what I found is in the financial world, whether it's working with individual clients or working with couples, it was really the communication around money that was the biggest challenge. I mean, of course, as a financial advisor, making the actual investments in the stock market, that type of thing was important. But the place where I really felt so true to myself and really living my essence was when I was having deeply fulfilling connections with my clients and helping them to do that as well. And of course, as you know, money tends to be the biggest challenge when it comes to being able to actually communicate with others. And so I found that over time, that became really my specialty as I was speaking to them around money, is really how to talk to each other and also how to talk to themselves in a way that was really effective, compassionate, and was able to help them really create what they wanted in their lives. Because it wasn't all about the actual, the green money itself. It was actually about what you brought up just a few moments ago, which is about valuing themselves and truly feeling worthy. It had nothing to do with the amount of money they had in the bank. And so that communication around money and the communication really around everything, but it starts often with money, is what really drives me. It's truly a calling for me to help people to connect more deeply. And that affects not only their personal lives, but it affects their professional lives and their ability to make a difference in the world. And for me, it's all about how we can make a positive impact in this world that we live in.
So true. I totally agree with you. It's crucial for people to have the courage to really be able to communicate around money and have the skills to stay calm and feel heard and actually have effective conversations instead of just money fights. And so what have you seen, why do you feel it's so important for people, this part, to develop the self-compassion to create greater prosperity and satisfaction in their lives?
Well, when it comes to self-compassion, it's so interesting because it's not something people talk about, but self-compassion around money and around every aspect of our lives is so important. Because the reality is, if we are bullying ourselves or criticizing ourselves and just not speaking well internally, that affects our connection to ourselves, our connection to God, source, intuition, really that more esoteric aspect of ourselves. But what that also does is it affects how we do ourselves in the world, to say it kind of literally, how we actually are connecting with others, and that means how we're connecting with money. And when we get frustrated with ourselves and we start blaming and shaming and what I call shooting on ourselves, it's actually very unproductive, and it actually can lead to a reduced amount of money in our bank account. It can lead to a reduced amount of emotional connection in our emotional bank account, and really ends up making it so that our lives are less fulfilling. So self-compassion is so key in having success on all levels in our lives. And unfortunately, many of us were brought up in a system where our own feelings or our own needs weren't necessarily valued, and so we've learned to be uncompassionate with ourselves instead of being compassionate, and that really causes a lot of challenges, whether it's health challenges, financial challenges, which I know is our focus today, but I really feel like it's all related because it's all about movement of energy. So it's about value and worth of everything in our lives. So self-compassion to me is really at the heart of having that success, the abundance that we want in our lives.
Wow. Yeah, it really feels like this growing edge for so many individuals, and then collectively, you know, how can we figure out to truly love and honor our value as unique human beings with innate genius to bring forth? And that to me is so crucial for the future of the planet, really, is to begin within as you're speaking to, and then be able to engage, whether it's at work or in our families or bigger communities, from that place of knowing ourselves and being so intimate with ourselves.
Yes, absolutely. I think that connection, that intimacy, as you spoke about with ourselves, is really key to not only having more money and feeling more connected, but it has so many benefits to it that are so important. And I find for my clients when I'm coaching them, what happens is if they're not feeling this connection, this intimacy with themselves, they often have a lot of anxiety. They can feel very nervous. They can feel insecure. But when they do actually have this connection, they're more peaceful, joyful, calm, feel more positive. They actually trust themselves, which allows them to trust others. They're more comfortable in their own skin, basically, and are able to have a greater degree of self-love. And so that's why I feel like it's just so very important to have that kind of intimacy, as you spoke about, with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. I believe it really is foundational to our true wealth, and as I share in the True Wealth Template, helping us redefine it not only as financial wealth, but also to include our inner wealth, our relational wealth, and environmental wealth, and so our capacity for love and experiencing our own self-love then ripples out into all these different areas and aspects of our well-being. And so I'm curious, how do your clients, how do they usually get started with you? What steps would you like to share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. People come to me as clients in many different ways. Some people might hear me speak, whether it's like we're doing today, in an interview format, or if it's in person at a live event. And some people find me online. And so they're certainly, you know, welcome to go to my website, which is jobisummer.com. That's J-O-B-I-E, summer, like the season, S-U-M-M-E-R.com. And they can go on there, and I even have a free audio they can listen to about self-compassion, which is going to help them to be more compassionate with themselves. So they can get to know me in many different ways. And then once they do end up becoming a client, we often look at really what are their intentions for their communication. You know, how do they want their ideal communication to be in their lives with themselves and others? And then we look at what's kind of getting in the way. What are the roadblocks that might be in the way? And then from there, then we start to really change some belief systems, change the patterns that are stopping them from where they want to be in their lives. And then I teach them a communication model that works really well to help them be better at communicating. So it's amazing the amount of communication challenges that are out there. So many people, they don't even necessarily realize just how much their communication is actually getting in the way of the life that they've always desired.
Mm. So true. And I really see people's fears just keeping them from reaching out for support. And what a great way just to, you know, have the courage just to download that free recording as a starting place for people, because as I listened to it, it just deeply spoke to me and really gave some great gems about how to apply this immediately. And I just encourage people, you know, to have that courage, especially when it's around money. You know, as we've both seen, it can be so challenging to talk about this, especially with our immediate family, and so many people don't reach out for financial professionals to ask the questions, you know. I hear it from so many women who have been shamed about their ignorance about money and feel dumb about it, and so just never ask the questions they need to be more empowered, mature adults with money. And what other blocks do you see that kind of stop people from being compassionate to themselves with money?
Well, I think the biggest blocks come from how they were brought up when they were younger, and there become these patterns that aren't necessarily healthy patterns that end up being part of how they relate to money and how they communicate with money and to themselves. And that can be basically many different things. So I can give you some examples. Like, for example, I've had clients who they used to feel very confident when they were a little child. Maybe they always liked to raise their hand in the classroom, and they were excited to learn. And we were talking about women with money. This is an example right here. They're excited to learn. They raise their hand, call on me, teacher. I have the answer. I want to participate and collaborate and learn and be here. And then maybe they are criticized for talking too much or raising their hand too much. And I've actually known many people who, when they were told by a teacher not to raise their hand anymore, they made this almost internal agreement, like a unknown agreement, but it's something inside themselves, when they actually decided, I'm not going to raise my hand anymore. I'm not going to ask questions. I'm not going to tell the answers, because this person in the front of the room isn't valuing me or respecting me for my input. And so it can happen literally. Someone who's 4 years old, 5 years old, they make this decision that they're not going to participate and connect. And even if it's about their ABCs or even about arithmetic for math, for example, since so much of financial planning seems like math, although it's really not. That's just a very small aspect of it. People do decide at that young age, I'm not good enough. And people say to themselves, and they don't even realize, but they're saying, I'm stupid, I'm not good at numbers, I'm not good with money, I'm not good with, you know, arithmetic, whatever language they're using. That actually creates this kind of way of being within them that stays with them until they actually do some work to really figure out how it really is. Because the reality is, most people who come to me and they think they're really dumb about money, they actually know quite a bit. But that ignorance that they've kind of talked themselves into, this feeling of like not knowing enough, that has gotten in the way so often. And then other times they think it comes from our parents. So I know many children, and I've dealt with this even when I was younger, being told that they had to not spend money, or they were bad or wrong if they weren't being careful with money. Even as a young child, maybe if they, you know, wanted to spend money on some candy or toys or something, they were told, we don't have enough, or money doesn't grow on trees, or you need to work hard for money. There's all these beliefs that get internalized into children that end up really affecting them for the rest of their lives. So those are just kind of a couple of different camps. You know, one is around in school as we're learning, and the other one is really with our parents and how they talk to us around money. Those are kind of two obstacles or barriers that can get in the way of having a healthy relationship with money.
Mm. Yeah, that, you know, that's really in my Discover Your True Wealth course, I begin with a money history questionnaire. And it was amazing when I did that with my husband years back. There were stories that came out that I'd never heard, you know, about when they lost their house and lived in a, you know, motel briefly. It was like, oh, wow, there are so many things, even when we think we're intimate with someone, when we go into those deeper layers of what happened to us as children and how that continues to impact us. I'm curious, do you see this with couples around money as well?
Oh, absolutely. Because when you come to a relationship, you know, we know this kind of on a maybe a theoretical level, but especially around money, there's several people in that relationship. You know, it's you and your husband, but then it's your husband's mom and your husband's dad and your mom and your dad and your whole lineage of how money was dealt with. And so it's not only the two people who are having that relationship, it's really those two people and all of their beliefs that came from their family. And I find with couples sometimes the couples will say things to each other that they don't necessarily even believe, but it's what they were brought up with, so it's just an automatic. Maybe their mom or their dad said it to them all the time when they were very young, so they just automatically started with that belief and it's internalized. And so definitely when it comes to couples, and I think it's probably the most, sex and money I would say are the two basically, but money is one of the most difficult areas to discuss as a couple, because it is, it definitely triggers us a lot. It's something where, because our value, our worth is so connected to it, it's definitely a conversation that brings up a lot of defensiveness, makes people feel really, very insecure and, you know, stupid, dumb, incapable, and that causes a lot of challenges in relationships with couples, absolutely.
Mm. And so I'm curious, you know, gosh, you've spent hundreds of hours talking to people about money. And, you know, I'm curious, you know, why do you feel like this mindset, money mindset piece is so important regardless of people's financial situations?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's so interesting. It has nothing to do with the actual financial situation, like how much is in someone's bank account. I met with people when I was a financial advisor, and now I deal with it more on the emotional level, but then I was dealing with it more on the very practical level. I met with people who might be in their 70s or 80s. I can remember one woman, for example, who was a widow, and she had over $1 million in the bank, in investments and, you know, cash and all different types of, different investments. And she was so afraid to go on a vacation because she was afraid that she would be homeless. You know, she was brought up in the Depression era, and she came from that place of so much fear that she didn't want to go on a vacation because she thought that was going to bankrupt her. And part of my work was to literally show her on a piece of paper, this is how this works, and you're going to be fine if you spend this money on vacation. Please go enjoy yourself. Enjoy your life. But she came from such a fearful place that she wasn't able to enjoy the money that she had been saving for so many years and that her family had been saving as well. And that I found to be such a travesty, really such a sad situation, to not be able to truly enjoy the wealth that she had. I've had other situations where there's a man and a woman or any type of couple that one person is very fearful and frugal and the other person is a big spender. Maybe they just don't pay attention to the value of money and they just spend and spend and spend and then they run out. And so those conversations between people can be extremely challenging, and that's one of the reasons that I help people with communication now and help them with some more compassionate ways to talk to each other instead of just keeping these bad habits that aren't really helping them.
Totally. It's like people are on this autopilot and so often reactive and instantly go into defensiveness. And it's amazing what some basic strategy and skill can really just take away all that stress about discussing money with other people. So what I'd like to do is take a short commercial break here, and then we will, when we come back, I'd love to hear, you have 5 steps to communicate compassionately around yourself with money. So I'd love to share that with listeners so they can begin right away to really implement this and see the benefits in their own life.
Ugh, not another money fight with your loved one. The yelling, the tears. It hurts so much when we're struggling financially. Money stress is the number one cause of divorce in America. Don't let it happen to you. 80% of spouses admit to hiding purchases from each other. Register for this free video training at discoveryourtruewealth.com and learn to avoid the 3 biggest mistakes that lead to financial stress. Trust me, those you love will thank you for upgrading your skills to build true wealth. Plus, by using the tips in this training, one woman boosted her credit score in less than 10 minutes. You are not alone in this. Go to discoveryourtruewealth.com and connect with a network of supportive women to create lasting change in your life.
So we are back with communications expert Joby Summer, and so excited, you know, just as we were talking, just feeling the significance of this finding our self-love, especially when it comes to worth and money and our own value. And I just see such incredible potential in humanity that can become unleashed when it's not bound by our mindset that keeps attacking ourselves, and just really ways that super excited to hear these 5 practical steps for more compassionate communication with yourself around money.
Absolutely. Well, I'm happy to share the steps, and I will let you know that these steps of how to communicate more effectively were actually developed many years ago by Marshall Rosenberg, and some people who are listening may have heard about this before, but I really love to use these steps specifically for self-compassion and for your audience here, self-compassion around money, and then also how to connect with others as well. So the model that I really love, and I've studied so many communication models, but this one is really the simplest and the one that works so well because it's just versatile and it's really effective, whether it's in family situations, business situations, conflict resolution. It works so well. It's known as compassionate communication. That's the terminology that I like to use. It's also been called, or originally it was called, nonviolent communication, so NVC for short. And so whether you want to look up compassionate communication or nonviolent communication, they're just 2 different ways of talking about the same model. And there's a lot to it, certainly. There's a book by Marshall Rosenberg that is just kind of the handbook, the Bible, on communication that's been around for many, many decades. So it's great work. And I want to just share with your audience today a little bit about the kind of the basics of how this works. And essentially there's 4 steps plus kind of a 5th step of how to put it all together to use this. And so I'll go through those steps with you, and please, Crystal, stop me as we're going through if you have any other deeper questions with each step, but I'll just go through and explain how they work. The first step when it comes to the communication model is really about observation. When we're talking with someone or talking to ourselves, we often go immediately to a place of blaming, judging, evaluating. And the reality is if we can just observe, that is actually a really important step in the process, because once we get to that place of criticizing, that's what leads to breakdown in connection and communication. So if we were talking to ourselves, for example, around maybe our bank account, we might observe that there's a specific dollar amount on the specific date in our bank account, which is very different than immediately judging ourselves for what that amount is that's in our bank account. So it's a very, very non-judgmental way of doing this. So that's step one, is observation. Step two is feelings. And this is a component where we actually express our feelings about what we've observed. And we've often been taught in our culture to express more the mental thoughts rather than our feelings about something. And so as a result, many times we're not even aware of what the true feelings are. And that kind of sabotage, that stuffing down our feelings, is actually counterproductive in allowing us to connect with ourselves, connect with others, and in this case, connecting with money. And so feelings are the second step. So we might look at our bank account, we observe a certain dollar amount very non-judgmentally, and then we look at how do we feel about that situation. We feel sad, we feel scared, we feel disappointed, we feel elated, excited. There's a certain feeling that goes with it. And then number three, step three, is needs. And needs are really, what are those underlying universal needs that we have? So often our true needs get completely ignored, and then we might get defensive, and that's when we end up getting upset with ourselves or getting upset by others. And if we can get in touch with our needs and be able to express them, like a need to feel safe, a need to feel secure, those types of needs, that is really the key to the third step here, is to know what our needs are, because if we don't know what they are, we can't actually honor our needs. They might be needs like empathy or support or even autonomy or love. And so these needs are really important. So if we looked at our bank account, we might say, okay, here's this dollar amount. I'm feeling scared about that, and my need is for security. Or if I were having a conversation with my husband, it might be, I might have a need for empathy or support. And then step four is actually request. This is a step that often gets omitted in so many conversations and leads to so much misunderstanding. We often expect both from ourselves and others that someone knows what our request is based on the underlying need. And the reality is we don't usually know ourselves what the request is, and so how is someone else going to know this? So the clearer and the more specific the request, really the easier it is to carry out. So request is it's best understood when it's used with positive languaging as well. And so that way we can have a positive request for ourselves or a positive request for someone else. So back to that example, we observe the bank account, we feel sad or frustrated, we need the support, we need the empathy, we need the understanding. The request might be to do something very specific, like I'm going to do A, B, or C to work on my money each day. I'm going to read about money. I'm going to attend Crystal's class. You know, it's something, what are you going to do to actually support yourself in your mindset and also on a literal cash flow basis, if that's the situation. And then step five is where we actually put it all together so we can play it out, whether it's in our own minds or with someone else, as an actual dialogue. This simple formula really is a great way to have supportive self-talk. And here's just an example here. When I hear or see blank, which would be observations, I feel blank, which is the feelings, because I'm needing blank, which are the needs, the underlying needs. Would you be willing to blank, which is a request? So when I see my bank account is really low at $200 on this date, I feel scared because I'm needing security, and I'm needing to feel supported. And if I were talking to my husband, for example, I might say, would you be willing to listen to me express how I'm feeling for 20 minutes or 5 minutes or 2 minutes or 60 seconds, whatever it is? Or would you be willing to teach me how to understand this statement if I don't understand the statement? So it's a very specific request. So those are the 5 parts. And in compassionate communication, they actually have a little method to remember them. The 4 parts were observation, feelings, needs, and requests. And if you put those together, O, F, and R, it's not very good English, but it's a fun way to remember it. The oftener I actually use this, the better I do, right? Kind of funny, right?
Good. Yeah.
So those are the steps, the 4 steps, and then the 5th one is just really putting it all together.
Mm. Awesome. I just love that method, and I think it is so helpful for people to have some guidelines to follow, because our emotions do get stirred up, and then it's like, oh, we can come back to this kind of method. How do you suggest people effectively approach this kind of conversation? Like, is it good to ask permission, make sure you have a good amount of time? Tell me a little bit more about how someone would even start this kind of process with someone.
So let's maybe find a scenario. Are you thinking with a husband and wife? I mean, what kind of situation? Then we can maybe use that to help us as a guideline.
Hmm. Yeah, that's good. Let's say maybe the wife has just found that she's overdrawn the bank account and needs to talk to the husband about it or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, well, I think that the key here is to have open lines of communication. And I think the more that people utilize this model, the more that's going to happen. And so I think people do it all different ways, but they might say, you know, honey, can we talk for a couple minutes? Or, you know, can we really making a small request to make sure that they're actually available and present to have this conversation? Because, of course, if we start this conversation while someone's in the middle of something or on the phone, we're not going to have as much success as when we actually have their full attention. So I do find that actually suggesting a time to have the conversation, or first, like you said, maybe asking some permissions first, that can be one way to do it. I find it reminds me a little bit of when we were brought up as kids, they taught us how to have an effective paragraph. You had kind of the opening sentence, and then you had kind of the stuff in the middle, and then you had the closing sentence. And I find when I have a conversation, that opening sentence is really important to really check and make sure they're ready to have the conversation instead of just jumping right in. And I think sometimes we, because we're nervous, especially, like in this case, you're talking about a woman who she's overdrawn her account. She's probably feeling really upset with herself already, and she's probably embarrassed and humiliated and all these things that go along with it. She might just blurt it out in a way that's not real effective. And so being able to set it up where it's in a loving, compassionate situation really would make a lot of sense in this situation. And one thing that I find works really well is before talking to someone else, first doing this method with yourself. And it can literally take 30 seconds once you get really good at it, which is, you know, when I notice that I overdrew my account, I feel really stupid and frustrated and humiliated. What I'm needing right now is compassion and kindness from my husband. Gosh, would I be willing to have a conversation with him? Would I be willing to ask him to talk to me? So just having that conversation internally so that you have an awareness of what's going on internally before then trying to express it and kind of stumbling over the words or blaming and complaining in the conversation. Does that make sense?
Mm. Totally. Yeah, I think that's really important. So we do set ourselves up for success and find a way to approach it and open the field so that we can have a good, productive conversation. You know, I'm curious how this applies to entrepreneurs, because I think we both work with a lot of entrepreneurs, and it can certainly be a challenge to, not only decide what you charge, but also make requests and negotiate with people. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious if you've seen what benefits this has as well for entrepreneurs.
Actually, this has huge benefits for entrepreneurs, and I'm two different kind of situations come to mind as you talk about that. One is an entrepreneur with their spouse, and one is an entrepreneur with their prospects and clients. And both of them really are so vital. I actually have done courses specifically on this. I did a presentation called Your Love Life and Your Legacy that was all about how if we're not having healthy communication in our love life, it actually affects our legacy, meaning our impact in the world. Because what happens is a lot of entrepreneurs, and I'll just say women for example, because you and I are women, and I know some of our audience is definitely a female audience. A woman might be an entrepreneur, and she's struggling with the ups and downs of having a business, and there's months she might make money, months she might not make money, and she's really working hard to do well. And if her husband, for example, is more of a person who's an employee who has a typical job, W-2 income, he might actually not necessarily understand what she's going through. And I found if a husband communicates a lot of doubt in a woman, her confidence, her self-worth, her value can go down very quickly. And I've met many women who had extreme confidence, felt very good about themselves, and then all it took was someone who was often a man who even was trying to be caring and asked about the numbers, how's your budget, how much have you spent this month, what have you done for, you know, how much did you make this month? Those types of questions can cause a lot of doubt in a woman who is an entrepreneur, and it goes both ways for a man as well. I'm just using that example. But when that happens, it actually can affect their business significantly, and it affects the relationship between the husband and wife. So that's a really big one I find for entrepreneurs. And then the second one that I mentioned is around clients and prospects, because if people are afraid to ask for money or afraid to have deeper conversations with prospects, they'll have a much tougher time actually selling, promoting whatever it is that they're doing. And I've actually worked with one woman who's a coach, and she actually found that she wasn't able to get clients to be motivated to move forward to pay her for her programs. And the challenge really was that she wasn't able to get to those deeper feelings and deeper needs within her clients to help them take action. And that was because she was always stunted, told when she was little that her feelings and needs weren't important and they weren't valued. So as we worked on this, she actually became more comfortable talking with prospects, helping them to become clients, and really take action to move forward and have success with her, you know, her strategies that she had. So there's really a couple of different things here. One is the personal relationship, and the other is the professional relationship, but both of them really relate a lot to how we communicate around money.
Mm. Totally makes sense. It is such a, we're really not taught these skills, and it's either communication skills, emotional intelligence, and financial management should all be mm-hmm. part of our primary education, and we really see the impact of that in the struggles of the average American, and that these are actually very crucial skills to, we are social creatures, and that mm-hmm. we really do depend on one another. And so when people actually have the courage to say, hey, I need to learn some of these skills, I just encourage people, it's never too late to learn these things in your life.
Absolutely. And I do some one-on-one coaching and some with couples, but I more recently have really started doing more and more group classes, because what I find is if you haven't had that education when you were brought up, then practicing is really important. And a lot of times if we can practice in a safe, secure environment with other people who are also wanting to improve their communication, then that can be a lot more beneficial than just trying to do it on our own. And especially when it's a conflict situation, say we're talking to a husband or a business partner about money, it's harder to do it, like to actually try a new practice like this model that I just gave with the five steps when it's a challenging situation. And so that's why I teach group courses where we can actually practice with easier, simpler examples, and it can become just normal for us to talk about that. And if anyone wants to learn about my group courses, I do have one coming up in a few weeks. It's all teleclass, so you have the ability to join me from anywhere. I have people from different countries who join me, and that, again, is at jobisummer.com. That's J-O-B-I-E, summer, S-U-M-M-E-R.com. And I would love for some of your listeners to join a group course where they can learn to communicate more effectively and have more fun with their communication.
Oh, yeah, I so agree. It is there is such a power to working within a group and, just dissolving some of the shame and guilt and fears we have. And I just, every time I do a group course, there's just huge breakthroughs. It's like this transformational portal opens because it is something that's been so intimate and so secretive for many. And you say, it's okay to just express your struggles and your suffering. And just am continually amazed that when people have the courage to say something they're ashamed about around their financial situation, you know, the relief that can come, like, I'm not alone in this struggle. It's pretty much everyone I've met has struggled and suffered in some way around their relationship with money, because, as I said, our society and culture just has some of these programs around not enough and the scarcity and not teaching us to cooperate and communicate, but instead compete. And there's so many levels that we really can heal together as through these group experiences.
Absolutely. And what I find is really interesting is when this healing around money happens, and I know you and I have spoken to about this offline a little bit, money and love are so connected because there's this energetic, it's all about how much can we take in, basically, like how much can we take into our lives. And as we heal around money, we actually are able to accept more love and be able to give more love. The giving and receiving, those kind of those, that flow is open. And so it's really interesting. I actually find when I work with people around their blocks, their belief systems that might even be about money or even other topics, what ends up happening is their self-love and love from others just starts to become so much bigger, and they start to have so much more love and joy in their lives. So money really is, it's like a symbol. It's like a microcosm of all the flow in the world that goes so far beyond those actual dollars that are, you know, physically in our hand, that cash that's in our hand.
Totally. And that's how I really like to define prosperity, is this natural balanced flow of giving and receiving. And I feel like, you know, it really, money is also this symbol for acknowledgement and appreciation. And so when people are feeling broke, as they say, you know, it's often that suffering because I'm not being acknowledged for my gifts. And there's like this desire for people to express their innate genius and be appreciated for it. And so often today, people are reduced to their identity is all wrapped up in their bank account and their net worth. And people who are unemployed feel like they're worthless. And just this deep and honorable, sacred desire we have to be acknowledged and appreciated. And I'm wondering how that works into self-love and compassion.
It's so much a part of it. I mean, we were talking earlier about entrepreneurs, and their ability to ask for acknowledgement in the form of dollars shows up in how they ask for love from their loved ones, how they value and see themselves as worthy. It's all so interconnected, so woven together. And I find men and women certainly struggle with this. Women have a tendency to struggle, I think, more so than men, because men, a lot of it's left brain, right brain. You know, men tend to be a little more left brain logical in their thinking. Women tend to be a little more right brain creative, more feminine in their thinking. I happen to be very balanced. I think some people just are more balanced than others. And so I can kind of dance in between both, but many women, they feel like they don't have this like more logical, mathematical mind, and because of that, they really give themselves a hard time and don't value themselves and don't have that worthiness, and so their lovability for themselves and by others is can be diminished.
So would you say the more we're able to love ourselves, then we're actually open to receiving love and acknowledgement in all forms from other people?
Oh, 100%. I think the more that we're able to acknowledge ourselves, love ourselves, respect ourselves, take care of ourselves, and just have that deep compassion, the more that we can do that, the more we are actually a portal. You used that word earlier. I love that. More that we are an open portal for that to flow in from others, because it's, you know, like attracts like. It's like if it's what we have inside of us that we can attract more of. So if we're being compassionate and loving to ourselves, the people around us are just automatically going to be that way to us.
Totally. Can you talk a little bit more? In my course, I really feel I share about empathy and developing that. And just curious your thoughts on empathy and the importance of that.
Absolutely. Well, self-empathy is so incredibly important. And actually, in compassionate communication, empathy is a big part of the model. And sometimes you were asking earlier about how to have a conversation with someone during maybe a difficult conflict or where there was something that they're ashamed about, like the example you gave earlier. One of the keys is to actually have self-empathy and then to have empathy for the other person. Sometimes before you can even do these steps that I talked about earlier, it's really important to share empathy, to really help someone know that you understand where they're coming from, really to empathize with where they are. And, yeah, that can be done through reflective languaging where we say, oh, I it sounds like you feel this way, or I'm guessing you might be feeling this way, or this might be happening for you. We never want to tell someone how they're feeling because that's always very patronizing. That doesn't work real well. But if we can try to really understand from someone's words or their body language or their actions how they're feeling, that can be an amazing way to develop deeper connection with each other. And like I said before, anything that we want to have with someone else, we need to be able to do with ourselves. So having that deep empathy of really noticing how we're feeling and what we need, that deep empathy is going to allow us to receive empathy from others and give empathy very willingly and very abundantly. So it's really key to this whole process.
Yeah, and it's again a skill that's really missing in our modern culture. I feel like there is that that it is actually we're like rewiring our brains. We're actually having these communications and getting vulnerable with people and feeling that we're safe to express our feelings and just that our world does need so much empathy right now and truly compassion with what we've come through in this, you know, in the modern form of economy and capitalism and how many people are suffering from this. And if we can turn towards the pain and embrace that and have that empathy for ourselves and others, then, you know, those judgments don't get in the way of human connection so much, and it really does seem like our connection is the source of value, our connection within, our connection with others, and our ability to feel connected.
Absolutely. And, you know, it just makes me think I actually attended a mediation yesterday, and I'm a trained mediator. And so I find that when I'm in a situation with two people who really are upset with each other, have a major conflict going on, as soon as they feel heard and seen and understood, where they really feel like, oh, someone gets me, essentially when I'm able to reflect back what they said to me, where they feel like someone empathizes, someone understands them, suddenly these walls, these barriers, the tension in the room literally just melts away, and allows for that connection that you're talking about. And it's amazing. I've just witnessed it through mediation, whether I was volunteering in a courthouse or doing it with clients in some way with a situation. I just find that ability for me to hear them, and then for them to hear each other and really empathize, it allows them to come together in a way that they just were not capable of before. I mean, literally, they were maybe in a fight, flight, freeze place in their life where they were in that crisis. And as soon as empathy occurred, there was a softening that allowed for understanding of each other. So empathy is just, it's so important in so many ways.
I'm curious, in the last 5 minutes or so here, any closing thoughts and other things you'd like to share?
Well, I just would like to share that this is such an important topic, really, about self-compassion and empathy when it comes to communication, and especially around difficult topics like money. I really encourage people to really get support, whether it's support from you, support from me, or from someone else, to really get support, because we're not taught how to communicate. We're not taught how to understand money. And so really make sure that they don't get embarrassed, don't get shy or humiliated. Really be willing to teach themselves and learn from people who've been there before, like you and I, who really can support them in our programs that we have, whether they're individual or group, or just listening to an audio like the self-compassion one that you listen to on my website. It's like that one audio is less, it's maybe an hour long, and I've had people listen to it and they had huge changes in their lives. So I just recommend they take one step forward. And in this case, if they want to go and listen to that at jobysummer.com, that's great. Or if you have some resources for them, that's always wonderful. Just take one step and do something to support yourself.
Yeah, and I really encourage people to not get discouraged by the state of the world and all of the what do I want to say? It's just by loving yourself in our modern world is actually a revolutionary act. And it's not selfish in the traditional sense. It's actually, you're being quite generous. I encourage people to be generous with their love for themselves. And I've just seen again and again that incredible capacity that humans have for love and for sharing our genius. Like, I just feel like it's kind of a time, like, all hands on deck. Let's get, you know, trust that we're good enough and get our work out there and share with one another and really appreciate all the different contributions and valuable insights and wisdom that people are bringing forward right now. And so when you're willing to shut up, have the critic quiet down and take the back seat and really invest the time in yourself to get some of these skills, and that actually ripples out in a very significant way in the world. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. And that's really the reason that I do what I do, is because it's like I know that there are so many challenges in the world as a result of poor communication. People aren't able to connect with each other in the media and politics and in so many places. And if they can have that connection with themselves and be able to connect with others, it literally is what can change the world. It really has that ripple effect. I truly believe that. I've seen it, and I know that it's true.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your incredibly valuable contributions to humanity and the way that you show up with such kindness and compassion yourself. I think you're, it's truly beautiful how you live your work, and I so appreciate your time today.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, the biggest compliment you can give us is to subscribe to the show and rate and review our podcast at iTunes. Be sure to visit www.moneymorphosis.com. That's money-morphosis.com to join the growing community of empowered women who are dedicated to creating the true wealth they deserve.